pleasure on that.
That would probably make the most sense.
Okay, all right. I'm very good with that. If I could then ask our two co-chairs to come forward from the math task force. And I'll provide a brief introduction to their report. As the two co-chairs are coming forward, obviously we enter this presentation and eventual discussion with the understanding that mathematics performance for our students and mathematics instruction is critically important relative to our mission work with our students. So this is an effort at focusing in a particularly important area of our curriculum. On November 16, 2006, obviously prior to my presence with you, a motion was presented to the Board of Education to initiate and complete a comprehensive, independent, and neutral review and assessment of the district's K-12 math curriculum and related issues. That motion was approved by the board with the understanding, with approval, that Superintendent Rainwater was to appoint a task force. There was a 10-member task force reported. And tonight we're joined by our two outside co-chairs, and that was specifically done to be able to have this review with some outside focus. Joining us this evening are Jim Lewis, professor and former chair of the mathematics department at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, who obviously has experience in mathematics as part of this important work. Blending that role with Merle Price, who is to my more immediate left, who is a former Los Angeles Unified School District Deputy Superintendent for Instruction and now a facility member in the Department of Education Leadership at Cal State Northridge. I think it was important that we had a perspective not only through their work as co-chairs on the importance of mathematics, but also on the importance of how schools operate. And it's my sense that both of these individuals bring those perspectives to this work. The appointments of the task force were approved on April 16, 2007. This is a complex set of issues that are presented to you this evening, and we know that there are different perspectives relative to these issues, but it's important if we are to commit to improving our efforts in the area of mathematics that we begin with this report, and then later on when they're completed with their presentation, I'll discuss next steps relative to the motion. So if I could turn it over to our two co-chairs and provide us that information, please go ahead.
Thank you, and it's good to be back after having studied some of the issues that were embedded in the questions that came from the board at our meeting that is well over a year ago. The resources that we hoped for through an application to the National Science Foundation, working with University of Wisconsin and WCER for an evaluation grant and case studies were not forthcoming. But in August of 2007, when we were informed that we did not have that grant, Superintendent Rainwater Dr. Terry Millar, the University of Wisconsin, who's Associate Dean for the Physical Sciences, found ways and resources that allowed us, although in a more limited way, to pursue a set of studies that could shed light on the issues that were before us. So the task force was reactivated in October 2007. And I want to acknowledge those who are on the task force, as well as the team from the University of Wisconsin, WCER, who helped in preparation of this report. In addition to Jim and me, Martha Alibali is a professor in the Department of Psychology and Educational Psychology, contributed. Charles Chapin, science teacher, La Follette High School, provided many insights from the instructional school level perspective. David Griffith, professor and former chair of the Department of Mathematics at UW-Madison. Jill Jacola, who is a parent, was very forthcoming with perspectives and took seriously the role of representing the parent community in our deliberations. Eric Knuth, who Professor, Department of Curriculum and Instruction, prepared the section, the chapter on instruction and teacher preparation that focused on the middle school. Mitchell Nathan, Professor, Department of Educational Psychology and Curriculum and Instruction, prepared the report on learning from curriculum. Norman Webb, who's a senior scientist at WCER, led a team did the report on student achievement, looking at data and evidence to address issues. And he was assisted by Steve Kosiak, who is actually here this evening. And we appreciated his contributions. Kenneth Zeichner, Associate Dean and Professor, School of Education, was also a staff. William Clune, who's here this evening, provided important contributions as a staff member to the task force. Matthew Felton, graduate student, Angela Hoistian, and Sarah Mason, a researcher at WCER. I mentioned Dr. Millar. He was persevering, persistent, and found resources in many ways that contributed to the ability of the task force to move forward. And finally, Paula White, researcher in WCER, who was a tremendous help not only with the report, but specifically the section on the survey of parents, teachers, and students. Monthly meetings were established and four working groups were identified so that we could take in-depth look at the analysis of student achievement. The review of curriculum and research findings about curricula that then became the section entitled Learning from Curriculum. The Instruction and Teacher Preparation Task Force was then delegated to Eric Knuth to prepare the report on instruction and teacher preparation, and the surveys of teachers, parents, and students led by Paula White. Draft reports were reviewed, and we had monthly meetings, and on June 19th and 20th, we came together here in Madison, and these were public noticed meetings under the Wisconsin Open Meeting Law. And the purpose of that intense work those 2 days were to identify the key findings and recommendations, which we could then bring forward as requested by the board. I personally want to express appreciation for the challenging issues and questions formulated by the board with 40 years of experience in education and now teaching educational leadership and working at two institutions, UCLA and Cal State Northridge. I found this a most challenging but also gratifying set of work, and in fact one of my deans is anxious to have me bring her a copy of the report because of the significance that it could have in education even nationally. And of course the tremendous research capacity at WCER. The way that Jim and I approached this, and he can speak for himself, but was with the ability, because of our outsider status, to be completely objective. And at every turn, we questioned ourselves and dialogued with each other about the fairest way to handle this, to provide the most accurate and valid response to the issues raised. I want to express appreciation to the MMSD staff. Brian, Lisa, and the support, they were forthcoming with any data, reports, documents, and resources that we needed, as well as the way the district helped facilitate the parent, teacher, and student surveys. We simply couldn't have done it without that support here at the school district. Before we get into a few specifics, I need also to say that what we found from the research reports, and this kind of sets the stage for our discussion this evening, and in the analysis of student achievement and survey of teachers, parents, and students, was not a broken system or one where bad decisions were made. To the contrary, and I know you've seen the report, parent, teacher, and student responses indicated support of mathematics instruction and curriculum, and for the most part believed it to be challenging for students. That said, there are areas for improvement that have been identified in the report and by the task force in the findings and recommendations that we believe will improve mathematics education in this district and provide for improved student outcomes. And with that said, I'd like to introduce my colleague, Professor Jim Lewis, to take us through some of those findings and recommendations.
Thank you. First, I want to comment that one of the reasons that I agree to do various things like this and other national committees I serve on is this sort of interesting life experiences you get. And so meeting Merle, who I'd never met before, who has lived a very different world in the public schools of Los Angeles, it's been a real pleasure, and he's been a real asset to everything we've done. But since he said that we were completely objective, maybe I should admit that for at least the last 9 years of my career, I have exclusively taught teachers, elementary school teachers and middle school teachers. I was chair of the committee that produced the document called The Mathematical Education of Teachers. I currently have a $5 million math science partnership institute grant to educate middle school math teachers that 90 have gotten a master's degree from over the last 3 years. And so I'm probably not completely objective on that issue. I am passionately a believer that teachers need to know more mathematical knowledge. But I should also say that in some sense, you didn't ask us to come do this job just to praise you. But perhaps to say, is there anything you ought to be concerned about? But before I do that, I want to comment that there is so much you should be pleased with or even proud of. First, the level of interest of your citizens, both critics and those who might praise you, is an asset. Your own commitment to issues like this is an asset. I wish the local school district where my children went were concerned enough to do something similar. And if outcomes are the final thing we look at, not just inputs, I am stunned by the fact that your ACT average is around 24.6 in mathematics over a number of years. For Wisconsin, it's 22.2. For the six school districts that have more than 10,000 students in the state, the highest is Green Bay at 22.9. For my own school district in Lincoln, where we think we're pretty ahead of the game too, it's 22.7. Entering class of my university, the highest we have ever had, is 25. That is a sort of mark of what you accomplish may make you the envy of most of the nation. Right. You also have one of the nation's great universities right down the street to turn to and partner with to attack the issues that you want to attack. But, in fact, one question might be, do we succeed with our best students? The report by Norm Webb includes a comparison of four large districts in the state of Wisconsin that has about 79,000 students, 3.2 times what Madison does. And yet you sent to the University of Wisconsin over the past 3-4 years 187 students with an ACT score above 31, and the districts 3 times your size sent only 110. You sent 354 with a score above 29, and these other districts only 334. So you're doing something right, right? But you, as you know, and I'm sure you know quite well, you are very much a changing district. In only 6 years, from 2000 to 2006, you went from 27% of your student population free and reduced lunch to 41%. That's a stunning change. ELL went from 9.7% to 17.1, essentially doubled. As you know, you're getting very close to being a minority-majority school district, a dramatic change in the last 6 years. So in light of this, Norm Webb's data tells you you do have some challenges. Using 3 years of mathematics as part of the definition of college-ready, only 58% of your graduates are college-ready. White students have an ACT score of 25, African American 19. That is intolerable, in my opinion, as a difference. Memorial and West have scores at 26.2, 26, whereas East and La Follette have 23.9 and 22.7. Now, actually, since that's better than my entire school district, it's not bad, but there is a gap there that I think you ought to pay attention to. Now, one of the things, as Norm's report points out, taking courses leads to success, and you are below the national average in percentage of students taking Algebra 2. You're below the national average in percentage of students taking 4 years of mathematics. You seem to have two populations. A population that takes 4 years of mathematics, about 51% of your population, and a population that takes two or less, 42% of your population. There's sort of no middle. It's like there are two populations being educated. And when we took a look at this, and we looked at a variety of things, you might say what we identified as job one, our first finding, is the need to align the district goals, policies, and resources so you have a very well-prepared workforce teaching mathematics, especially in grades 5 to 8. We point out that the Learning First Alliance, and 10 years ago, said that all students in grades 5 to 8 should be taught by a math specialist. The Math Education of Teachers document that I referred to said the same thing in 2001. All students should study from someone who is a math specialist in grades 5 through 8, and give roughly a definition, at least 7 math courses, many of which focus on the mathematics that students taught in order to have a very deep understanding of the curriculum being taught. And so we made a bunch of recommendations. One of them is that you should set as a goal to have math specialists in grades 5 through 8 in about 6 years. Another, that in your hiring, you should make math knowledge a real priority for the people grades 5 through 8 who will teach mathematics. Essentially, look for math specialists or look for people who will continue their education to become math specialists once hired by your district. We urge you to make a big commitment to professional development, and I recognize how incredibly hard that must be as you're facing issues of budget cuts. We urge you to strengthen your partnership with the University of Wisconsin, especially the mathematics department and the faculty in mathematics education, to take advantage of what is available in your community to strengthen the mathematical and pedagogical knowledge of your workforce. And underneath all of this is the fact that you are at a state that where the Department of Public Instruction simply doesn't have policies that value mathematical knowledge in their teacher workforce in grades 5 through 8. We urge you to advocate for a math certification or certificate in your state and urge the University of Wisconsin to provide the curriculum that will move teachers in that direction. And as our report from Eric Knuth says, they do have a minor for teacher educators that would bring them 15 hours of mathematics as part of an elementary preparation, which would greatly strengthen and move in this direction. More, in fact, needs to be done. We looked at curriculum issues, and nationally, much of the research that exists could be quarreled with, and there's not a whole lot that sort of is as helpful as we would like it to be, but it says there are a lot of curricula products that are acceptable. And it also says that the difference that one makes over the other when you control for other factors is not that significant. That's why I believe that teacher knowledge of mathematics and pedagogy is the big variable. The particular curriculum that you choose is a smaller variable. But now, we certainly also agree with the National Math Panel that conceptual understanding, computational fluency, and problem solving should all be done at the same time. And you should not get into any kind of light beer, tastes great, less filling debate over what you ought to be teaching. You want all of that. Now, we also made a recommendation. It's recommendation 13, that it should be your long-term goal to accomplish as quickly as possible that by the end of the ninth grade, students have covered the curriculum taught in Algebra 1 or in geometry, or at least in your years 1 and 2 of your integrated mathematics, if you follow that program. My district, which in many respects ought to look up to your district, about 1999, when my youngest son was still in middle school, had about the same percentage of 8th graders taking algebra as your district. Now it has 50%. It has virtually all students in the Lincoln Public Schools taking Algebra 1 by the 9th grade. It has double periods for those students who are furthest behind grade level, so that they have the time on task to improve and accomplish a full high school curriculum. It's a clear priority with my district, and much of this begins with you in terms of what you tell the folks who work with you. I think folks who work with you, for you, are good people, very capable people, but they've been moving toward a goal that perhaps a board that only a few of you were on set as a goal of finishing Algebra 1 by the 10th grade. You need a much more ambitious goal. Merle?
I would like to pick up on some concerns that emerged both in the survey and in the curriculum analysis. And I'll reference finding 7. The surveys uncovered concern with the coherence of the curriculum, and now quoting from that finding, especially at the elementary and high school levels, parents and teachers expressed concern about the lack of coherence both within and across schools. Now, I think the middle school level, because of the connected math, is more consistent. But in finding 2, we went on to focus on another issue related to coherence, and that is that many education professionals, including the members of our task force, are very concerned that this results in special challenges to highly mobile students. And they are disproportionately those kids from low-income households. Thus, the policy of permitting schools to have different mathematics programs and use different textbooks has its greatest negative impact on a population that is already the hardest for the district to reach. So we're very explicit about taking a look at that issue. This disparity has caused stress on students, teachers, and parents as early as elementary school across the district. At the high school level, there's also a need for looking at coherence with different pathways. Not all the high schools have the integrated math pathways, and even in schools that have various options, I know that this is an issue, and fortunately, you do have leadership, and I'll even reference my lunchtime conversation today when I had an opportunity to talk to Brian about the work that they're doing now on establishing for the first time standards in all of the core courses and beginning the conversations about coherence in pathways. So again, even though we're asserting these recommendations, which we think are important, it's not to say that the district already hasn't recognized some of these issues and even begun the work that would move toward implementing some of these recommendations. So the recommendations include giving serious consideration to selecting a single textbook for each grade level or course and requiring a common core sequence across all the high schools. We've referenced the achievement gap and the issues of different outcomes. Of course, most districts across the nation, including my own district where I spent 40 years, is very heavily into how to close that gap. But we want, and we made explicit in Recommendation 7, that in making improvements and investing resources, the district needs to always consider how best to reduce those large achievement gaps among subgroups of students. And let me give you an example. For example, we are impressed by the extended learning summer opportunities for those students who struggle, the opportunities to extend time and engage those students so that, in fact, their learning can be accelerated and be brought back closer to grade level. In the report on student achievement, we were handicapped by the inability to measure student growth from year to year in what is known as value-added analysis, and we are encouraged that the district has taken steps to address that. And the best kind of metaphor I can give for what value-added does, it's sort of like the parent, you know, those height measurements we make on the wall and we draw the line and we see from year to year how kids are growing. Well, that is actually what value-added can do. Rather than an average scale score or a percentage of students who reach a benchmark, it actually takes the same student from year to year and looks at growth, which then allows for much more analysis of the impact of either a particular program, a particular school, or even in some areas, Texas and Tennessee, where the notion started, even particular teacher effects on student growth. In the surveys, there was a strong indication from teachers that they would appreciate more time to collaborate, learn from each other, analyze achievement data, and address the needs of the diverse learners who are part of the achievement gap. And so we wanted to put that on the radar screen front and center as something to include in future plans for improving math education. Parents also, I think this is a great opportunity, parents expressed the interest and the need to learn more about the district's mathematics instruction. Now, a disclaimer here, Jim and I were not in your schools interviewing parents, but we did have the results of over 400 parents responding, a very good response rate for parents, actually, in surveys from the surveys that I'm familiar with. This was a high response rate, but they would welcome the opportunity. And so I do know of districts that offer math nights and opportunities for parents to engage in what their students are learning and be able to carry home the conversations and actually work with their own students on the same goals that the teachers have. Instruction at all grade levels should, we mentioned, focus on the integration of conceptual and procedural knowledge. And I thought that this report that also amplified the National Math Panel findings did a very good job of saying, even though it was bilateral, there were influences, that also the foundation of conceptual understanding does improve procedural mathematics with students when it precedes it, and that's something that I think your math team is aware of. Although the increase in number of students taking and passing algebra is encouraging, the large number of failing grades was a serious concern, and the district should investigate causes of the problems and identify and implement best research-based remedies. I think I want to stop there because there are other findings within each of the individual reports, and we do want to end on that note of encouraging, which maybe some of you have, getting into the depth of some of those reports. But I also want to convey with Jim my confidence that MSD staff is on the right track in terms of already having identified some of these issues and moving forward on them. So I think this proposed motion of letting the superintendent and staff dig into it with their analysis, look at the available resources, and even phase in these recommendations, especially the one you mentioned, Jim, the six-year plan toward math specialists in partnership with programs at UW-Madison is exactly the right course. And even though we won't be directly involved anymore, I'm sure Jim and I will follow with interest how you can take this. And I am serious, and I know I've talked to Terry Millar and Jim, that our hope is that this is not the report that gets put on the shelf, but a few years from now, you're referencing it in terms of the things that you've checked off that have been accomplished, and when you come back, or when you celebrate closing the achievement gap and addressing all of these issues with higher performance, invite us back to the celebration. We'll stop there.
Does anyone have any comments or questions for task force chairs? Mr. Hughes?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your work on this. I haven't gotten through the whole report, but I have read a good amount of it, and I'm really impressed by it, and it's very informative and illuminating. One of the takeaways I take from what I've read so far is that of the various recommendations that you make, they are of differing degrees of challenge in terms of implementing. But when you combine your finding that the particular curriculum that's chosen doesn't have a significant impact on outcomes and the disadvantages that come from the disparate curricula that are in place in our schools, it seems like the easiest goal to achieve would simply to have a uniform curriculum through the schools. I noticed that you tried to make, you know, the pluses and minuses of that spell it out in the report, but the minuses didn't really come through for me. Am I misinterpreting it, or is that?
Well, we don't completely understand your culture, your community, how important, how deeply you believe local control of schools is the greatest value. But I certainly believe that there is something to be achieved if you were to pick a curriculum and stick with it. Now, you might pick one that would not be the one I would pick or that someone else you respect would pick. But if you stick with it and you work with it over an extended period of time, you will have advantages that come from using the same curriculum for a number of years. And you will have advantages that come from having a single curriculum, especially, as I said, with the more mobile students in your community. And since we place sort of the achievement of the students in mathematics is pretty high on the value system, we would come down on the side of that's something you ought to consider, but we also are respectful of the possibility that you have very different views about how schools ought to be organized. And so we think of it as a legitimate, appropriate thing for the board to decide its values.
I had a second question. You talked about math specialists and how it would be good to have math specialists in the middle schools. Now, how aspirational a goal is that in the sense, are we behind other districts in that? Do other districts have math specialists, or is that something that we would be blazing a trail on?
Across the nation, you're going to see an enormous variety. Since I live in a very rural state, I live in a state that overwhelmingly has high school certified teachers teach grades 7 and 8. All right. But it's moved more recently to the concept of middle school certification because there is no doubt that successful teaching or causing students to learn is an important blend of mathematical knowledge, pedagogical knowledge, and knowledge of children. All right. And so you want a community of teachers who are interested in teaching at that level, not the ones who didn't get the job in the high school. And you want, but you also want people who have a substantial math knowledge. Now, as I said, I have a middle school program that's going beyond that and leading to master's degrees in mathematics for middle school teachers. The Lincoln Public Schools, in believing that that was an important part of ratcheting up their expectations and their achievements, has a very large number of their middle school teachers in our program. And we're trying to develop the same kind of university school district partnership that will have our program continue for a long time. There are states that have tried to move to a math specialist. It is often a law of supply and demand. You have more teachers that you need to stand in front of students, especially when you include sixth grade or move down toward fifth grade. Then you have people with a strong mathematics background. And especially in your state, which has not made a priority of mathematical knowledge at that level, You have a lot working against you, but I think you could start in the right direction and take advantage of the talent that exists in your math department at the university, and you can get there. And there are districts that are doing it, and there are other districts that still are focused on what is called the middle school philosophy. We teach the child and not the subject.
Thanks.
Let me reiterate that the issue is not one that resides just with this school district. The Wisconsin policy of the Department of Public Instruction, which allows elementary credentialing to suffice for teachers in middle school, results, I believe, I thought it was 80%, but I heard today from someone who should know that it's over 90% of your middle school teachers have that elementary certification. Well, that's 3 years of mathematics rather than the seven.
Three courses rather than the seven.
And which is not to say, because we don't know that some of those teachers on their own haven't taken advantage of opportunities and improved their math content knowledge and their pedagogy knowledge. But we also had some anecdotal evidence that even in the assignments of teachers, that occasionally teachers who even were in the math master's program, for example, were reassigned at a school site level to something other than teaching mathematics. And so we put in the recommendation that not only in hiring practices and certification, but even at the site level, to make it a priority to find teachers who have the knowledge, expertise, and preparation and experience, and keep them in mathematics.
Mr. Winston?
Thank you very much. Just a couple things. First, thank you for the report and all the hard work that you did in coming up with this document. And thank you, Ms. Jokula is out there, and any other committee members that are out there. Thank you for their hard work as well. Another thing, is there additional copies of this information, of this report? Because if there is, I would hope, and I don't know, don't want to speak for them or anything like that, but former board members Ruth Robarts and Lori Kubza really pushed hard for this information, as well as Ms. Mathiak as well, pushed hard for this to happen in terms of this task force, and it grew out of concern from members of the community, and then grew from the superintendent's evaluation. And obviously, Superintendent Rainwater did what the board asked him to do. So things do happen on the school board level related to student achievement, and this is testimony of that. And lastly, just what you both had said, alluded to before, I hope that this document is not something that just sits on the shelf. And I know Superintendent Neerad has talked a lot about our school board becoming more involved in student achievement. And these are the kinds of things that I really think that, you know, hopefully our school board can really dive into. And, you know, again, if we can not deal so much with the money side of things, and if a referendum can pass on November 4th, then maybe we can get into these kinds of things. And I think that really would bode well for the students in this district. So, again, thank you very much for your hard work and our school board's diligence. And, again, Ms. Mathiak as well, your hard work in kind of pushing this forward.
Ms. Moss?
Yeah, I also wanted to just say that I really appreciate this. I think that a lot of these recommendations were things that we have all kind of thought about and known, but having you come in with fresh eyes and saying this is really happening and this is how it compares to other places, it is very meaningful. And I think that some of these we can jump on and we can do something about that, encouraging eighth graders to take algebra and moving that goal and then giving the kids and making it more of a priority. Because as far as I've seen, it really isn't consistent. And we do have, we have the Algebra 1, but you don't want your kid there. You want them in 1A, because if they're in 1, they might fail. You know, there are all these little nuances to our math classes. And I think that there is, if we make it more consistent, then I really think that's going to be something we can do quickly. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Ms. Napayek?
I wanted to go back to the issue of the achievement gap. As I look at Exhibit B.31, and you don't have to look it up, because I'll explain why I'm looking at it. I noticed that almost 80% of the respondents to the parent survey were white. And so I'm wondering if this tells us more about math education for white families than it does for students of color, which are an increasing portion of our school district. The student responses are a bit more diverse, but it just strikes me that out of 397 respondents, 311 self-identify as white, which does not represent the parent populations for many of our schools. So how can you give us some thoughts on how we apply this to issues relating to achievement gap, given that the respondents don't seem to be particularly diverse at the parent level, and even at the student level, it's a little bit disappointing?
I don't know if Paula has any insights from the survey process. We know that in the mailings, everyone had the opportunity to respond. It's not unusual that those, whether it's poverty issues or disenfranchisement, may choose not to respond at a rate comparable to those from higher socioeconomic categories. However, there are remedies which are to conduct focus groups, and the students, for example, were high rates of responders because they were a captive audience in classes, and you have them there. So to get more insights from parents who were not represented proportionately to their numbers in the district, it probably would take more than just mailing out a survey. It would take bringing them to a meeting and making it important enough that they would feel that their input was valued.
But
thank you. I don't see that in the methodological notes, so I just want to clarify they were only administered by mail. There were no telephone surveys, no.
That's right. I think that you are on target that the people who feel most disenfranchised, least welcomed by the school district, are least likely to respond to surveys like that. And I think you're moving in the direction of saying that then you as a board have to redouble your own efforts to be concerned.
Follow-ups. So they were all given the opportunity several times to respond.
Yeah, I think I may want to consult with some demographers who work with disenfranchised populations, because I could imagine if I was a parent who didn't feel very connected to the school district, an envelope comes from the school, I'm not even going to open it. It's going straight, you know, to the circular recycle bin. And the same with even the language issues. You know, I've been in meetings with parents, and it's a mixed bag. I've watched the district go to great lengths to translate documents into Hmong and Spanish, and the fact is the parents aren't literate in their languages, so it's pointless to send it out in the language they speak because they may not read it. And certainly at the level that these questions are asked, there's a level of complexity that I think could be considered challenging. So I would hope that as part of the next step for the district, we make an effort to work with people who really spend time doing survey research with disadvantaged populations to figure out a strategy for getting valid survey responses that would shed light on what you're articulating as one of the biggest problems we face, which is that achievement gap.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I just wanted to say that when we first started the methodology for this, we had really intended focus groups and observations and interviews and as Merle pointed out, our funding was limited. So I would highly recommend in the future, if you could set up focus groups, that kind of thing would be an excellent way to get more feedback. We did look at other surveys that were conducted in other districts, and comparatively, we had an excellent response rate. Normally, other districts have been getting something like 3 or 5% return rates from parents. And we did get 99% from the students because the surveys were administered in the classroom. So when you see that there aren't as many African Americans or minorities in that sample, it's simply because they weren't in the random sampling. Or it's possible they were absent on that day.
But that alone begs for a follow-up survey with the students. Are there any other questions or comments? Ms. Cole?
Well, I did go through most of this report, and it's kind of hard to summarize, but I was concerned in one of the sections where it talked about the mathematics scale scores have been declining over the past several years, and I'm wondering if you had any findings of what that was related to or if that was of a concern of yours. It was in Section 3. Page 13, and it's kind of goes hand in hand with this achievement gap issue, which it was also really disconcerting that our district is below average when you look at math credits in high school, and I'm wondering, is that an issue of engagement or preparation? Do you have any ideas as far as, or is it just standards that, you know, that the district sets that kids are meeting only, you know, if we set a standard that you only take 2 credits of math and they take the bare minimum. So is it an issue of us needing to do more, or how would you approach that?
Well, first I'll comment on the scale scores. And if you read it, it says over a period of about 6 or 8 years, that they have gone down at grades 4, 8, and 10 at a level that you could say it's about one half a year of schooling. Now, you could try to turn lemons into lemonade or something and say that one half grade drop happens by the fourth grade, and the good hard work of your teacher workforce keeps it from getting worse. You could hypothesize that if you take this dramatic change in English language learners and dramatic change in low-income students, and you were to model that, you might have expected that if all other things were held constant, the quality of your workforce, your commitment to success, high standards, and you had this change in population, the fact that the populations themselves score so different, that something like that is to be expected. I was somewhat frustrated that we couldn't do, apparently, an analysis that would tell us in a much more definitive sense whether that was exactly what was underneath it. But even if that is underneath it, it's like you recognize it gets cold in Madison in the winter, and then you act accordingly to adjust and have the community that you want to have. Similarly, you pay attention to these changes that you cannot affect, and then ask your staff to work on how do we overcome that and achieve at a higher level. So first, I do think it should be of some concern, but I don't think it should be the sky is falling, all right, because I think that a measurable part of it is connected with the change of your community. Another part of this, I think, is, and this is for you personally to deal with, what are the ambitions of the district? You educate about 50 to 60% of your student population incredibly well. But if your policies say it's okay to only take 2 years of mathematics, then a large percentage of your community will choose to only take 2 years or less of mathematics. If your policies say we want everybody to take algebra by the eighth grade, by the 10th grade, then that's setting in motion what your staff is supposed to work for. And if you said, well, gee, Lincoln, Nebraska can have 50% of its students take algebra in the eighth grade, so can Madison, then you can change that.
That goes back to kind of some of these tables that were really concerning to me when it looked at the highest math course by grade 11 and took the grade 6 cohort. And for African Americans, it became clear that there wasn't, that the large amount was kind of near basic math and regular math, and likewise the credits were what really bothered me. The fact that ninth graders, especially African American students, were only earning one. A majority of them were earning one or two credits and not three or four, and there was just such a disparity. And I do think that goes back to what you said, and I'm glad you said it, that we're educating half of our students very well. And I would pose that while I love hearing about high ACT scores, they are a standardized test, and a certain demographic of our population, I think, learns early on how to take tests well. I'm not sure if it's totally reflective of our math program. And the only reason why I say that is that we have a lot of students that transfer in. We have a lot of homeschools. We have a lot of private schools that hold their kids back and then send them in ninth grade. And so while I do want to take some credit for it, I want to look at it constructively to make sure that that we've kind of looked at under all the rocks. And that gets to my final question, which is in regards to where we were looking at teachers and how they supplement their materials. It looks like there's a few different, like, core resources, but what was interesting was looking at what teachers used for supplemental. And I'm wondering if you can tell us how we can kind of look at that data later on, because I think that's the one of the concerns of many parents is that they supplement at home. I mean, there's this underground network of parents that are keeping Singapore math books at different bookstores in business because they're giving their kids these books, and I'm wondering how we can look at this differently, because I do agree with you that we need to have something consistent across the grades, especially with populations moving. But on the other hand, I think it was really important to look at things where teachers have said that they supplement, some 40% with Singapore math, which is really different from how we are using our core math programs. And I just one other caveat, which is that this report from the National Mathematics Advisory Panel goes into that about how, it's good to have consistency throughout a district, but to be an ideologue and only look at one curriculum. And one way of teaching really is a disservice to special ed, gifted and talented, and just kids in general. So any comments you would have regarding that statement?
Well, first I'll comment that I think you're very insightful to notice that particular table and be concerned about it. Now, I'm an outsider, so if I step on someone's toes, maybe I'll get out of town tomorrow. But you make a decision one by one or across the district to buy a curriculum, and millions of dollars are invested in. And then your teachers use those as supplementary resources, and as their more core resource, they use something that was developed here. In a sense, it's sort of like the Reader's Digest version of the curriculum that cost a lot of money to create and that you purchased. I personally, I think I was more of a minority on the committee, but I personally believe that was good intentions gone wrong, and that the greatest willingness to sort of go one's own way happened among elementary teachers, and the most adherence to a curriculum was to the best educated, your high school teachers who knew the most mathematical knowledge. And so there's an issue there for y'all to resolve.
Any other questions? I would like to personally thank you for your leadership, and thank the task force for the time that they put into working on this project. I know it's been a while, but I think there's a lot of tremendously valuable information in the report, and it's much appreciated. I haven't gone through quite all of the details yet, but I certainly appreciate the way this is set up, because it was easy to go through and review your findings and recommendations. So again, thank you very much for your time and your effort. Of course, I think as one of my colleagues said, the real the real issue is what we do with the report and what the next steps will be. And with that, I am going to make a motion that the board receive the report of the findings and recommendations of the math task force and direct the administration to prepare an analysis of the report.
Second.
Motion and a second. Ms. Mathiak?
Do we want this to be open-ended, or do we want to have a deadline?
I was going to ask the superintendent what his plans were.
Well, I believe we need a deadline. I just don't know what deadline to put on it, and I would be very comfortable coming back with a more defined deadline. And I'd also, whenever you're done with your questions, I'd like to speak to the motion.
Are there any other comments on the motion or discussion? Mr. Hughes.
One of the frustrations that the authors identified was not being able to use the value-added information. And my understanding is that we will have that information within the next month or so?
That's correct.
Is there any indication of looking at whatever information of the administration, looking at whatever that shows and might illuminate some of the recommendations or observations in the report?
I believe it will. In what way, I don't know at this point, because I'm waiting for the report, but I think we need to look at what they've recommended in relationship to the chapter on achievement and then put that data into the mix as well.
Any other discussion? Ms. Cole.
Just one question. Will this be available on the website for the... It is on there now?
Okay, great. Thanks. Okay. Ms. Passon?
Do we have a program, do we have anybody working on DPI to get these credentialed teachers? Any policy?
I don't believe, I'm not comfortable saying there's any concerted effort, but this is a recommendation that I believe gives us a clear sense of direction for that advocacy going forward.
Okay. Is there any way we can increase the knowledge of our math teachers and leave DPI out of it?
Well, here's what I would say. It does put a whole layer of complexity on this, but there really are two issues relative to teacher preparation. One is our existing staff in terms of their preparation, and I believe that that question really is appropriate for the existing staff. But then the question, all the other piece is preparation for people we hire. And obviously, if there's a need for investments, which I believe there is on the professional development side to implement this plan, it would be a lot better from my perspective to be able to focus on our existing teachers and helping them move along, and then hire teachers that come with the right credentials. So it's a shared partnership between what the district is committed to doing and how teachers are prepared during their pre-service learning program.
Yeah.
So it's a both and.
It's certainly clear that professional development is something that's very necessary in an increase in professional
right.
development.
I agree.
Ms. Mathiak?
This is just a point of clarification from the superintendent. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we must meet DPI standards, but nothing prohibits us from exceeding DPI standards?
That's correct.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And that passes 7-0. I'm sorry, Superintendent.
Oh, that's okay. If I could just very briefly obviously add my thanks as well for the work that's been done here and the commitment of the task force members to help us understand this very important area involving our students. I believe the report speaks to the importance of math in our contemporary society and what we need to do in terms of improving our program in the area of math alone. But it also speaks to other things that will affect total district life. And it poses the question around curriculum consistency. And I believe that is going to be a discussion I'll need to bring back here as well. Because it starts with math, but are there other areas of our current approach that also, beg the same type of discussion? It speaks, as the question that was just raised, to professional development and the kind of commitment that's going to be needed. It also speaks to things like what are we willing to do in the way of interventions for students. The example that was given, which is one I'm very familiar with, and just pose it as a question, are we willing to create a standard for double dosing students in middle school, high school, just as an example. Students who can meet the standards but need more time and need a second period of a different, perhaps, learning approach and reinforcing those skills. And those are things that I think will have policy flavors to them as well. I guess what I want you to know is I will come back with a timeline. But my intention will be to work with many others in identifying a plan that will move these recommendations forward because I think we have that need. Because at the end of the day, this really speaks to the changing to our total student population, if I can put it this way. And I'll put it in question form. What are we prepared to do different for our students who are meeting proficiency right now? And are there things, a part of policy and a part of curriculum and part of instruction, that will advance their learning? And obviously we have data that is confirming regarding the unacceptable achievement gaps for our students in the area of mathematics. You know, it speaks to what we need to be about, yes, in math, but about our total improvement commitment around improving achievement for kids meeting standard, taking them to the next place, and facing these achievement gap issues very squarely. I guess what I want you to know is I will come back with a set of recommendations, but I intend to also, and this in parts relate to the discussion about the survey, is that we will use an engagement process to help me frame up the recommendations, maybe in order of priority, meaning reaching out to our teaching staff, reaching out to parents in perhaps some creative ways, reaching out to students, reaching out to business people in the community that have a clear need to ensure that our kids do well math in the area of math. So know that I'll embed that part in as well, because I think we need to listen a little bit more to what the community wants from us and proceed with my recommendations back to you informed by that process. So it's about math. It's about improving achievement. It's going to be about policy. It's going to be about curriculum and commitment to professional learning. And, you know, I feel a need to advance the discussion beyond what your good work has provided us, and I will do that.
Thank you, Superintendent. Thank you both again.